You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Good afternoon, Jeff Poore, Phil and Ed Poore, Phil Williams. Taking some well-deserved time off. You get me. I am a radio host out in Mobile, editor of, forgot to plug this earlier, but I'm the editor of 1819news.com. It's a great website. I encourage everybody to go check it out. Also, Lady at Mobile, if you're ever down in Mobile, pick it up. It comes out every week, a print newspaper. I write a column and still cranking out bylines at Breitbart News. Some of you may be familiar with that as well. But we got a busy show for you today. A couple more hours to go here. Hour number two now underway. Coming in about a half hour, State Senator Garland Gudge for Coleman. And then in the 4 o'clock hour, we'll talk to the Alabama Republican Party chairman, John Wall. And busy day, busy few days for him. He's been all over the state. We'll talk to him. But real quick before we get rolling here, I want to get a word in from our sponsor, Boomer. Take it away.
I tell you, our friends at Southern Immediate Care. Southern Immediate Care, one of the sponsors of our show, they are a chain of clinics that are doing amazingly good work all over North Alabama. They got locations in Gadsden, Anniston, Atala, 5 locations around the Birmingham area. Their 2 newest ones are in Chelsea and Hoover, and I hear that more are coming. But you may want to know they are open 7 days a week. They will take all ages. I'm talking about from pediatric to geriatric. You go in there, the staff is always friendly, the place is always clean, and I can just tell you, this is who I use. Southern Immediate Care. I use them in the Gadsden area, and they are always Johnny on the spot. I mean, they are so amenable. They are so everything is so well received, and I never mind going there. Southern Immediate Care. If you need care 7 days, I mean, think about it. Saturday morning, you wake up, the kid's got a fever. What do? Southern Immediate Care. Look them up online. Find the location nearest to you. I'm just telling you. I know the folks that own this chain, and they are amazing people. And check them out. Southern Immediate Care, all over North Alabama. Find the one nearest to you, and tell them you heard about it on Right Side Radio.
Yeah, y'all check that out, Southern Immediate Care. Always you should support the sponsors of this program. I would tell you that even if on other radio shows like my own. But anyway, enough of that. Get into it here. Real quick, 833-687-4448. Or if you prefer alphanumeric, 833-68 right, RIGHT. If you need to call in and respond, comment, complaint, suggestion, you want a new guest host, this is the place to direct all your complaints. What about you? Complaints. We have a suggestion box, twitter.com / SEN Phil Williams. And just I would direct all your complaints to Twitter there. Back to it here. I was talking about this in the last segment, kind of giving you a tease. There's a real disconnect. Maybe I am in talk radio bubble and 1819 right-wing news world. But do you ever get the sense that the Alabama legislature and not so much the legislature, I'll leave them out of it, but the government, the bureaucracy, from the governor on down, they're just not really on board with this whole, consent to the govern thing. And so, yesterday, I get a liberal journalist to treat me and other right wingers like we're some kind of endangered species zoo exhibit. How fascinating we are, and we would like to study you, and we want to know what makes you tick. And so I'm like, all right, I'll take you on here. Hit me with your questions, and it gets into this. It got into this. Like, why do you do this? Why do you think this way or whatever? And guys, we have these philosophical discussions. We have these ideological debates, and we can do it till we're blue in the face. I mean, that's what talk radio is. Our side is the right way. Right side, conservative, solid, just plain right. Solid conservative, just plain right. But anyway, that's what it's all about. But what's being missed here? Be it liberal, conservative, whatever. You get the sense that there's just a lack of care about any of that based on what the voters want. The way they view Alabama government. And the best example, the best textbook example is the history, archives and history controversy. And they had an LGBTQ luncheon. And then there's other examples. This craziness with the books in the public library. You guys in Madison. And they weren't going to let you have that event with Kirk Cameron, and then suddenly they came around and they did. But it was this. Somewhere along the way, without having any input from you and I, school teachers, librarians, all these, they are civil servants, decided what was going to be moral, what was going to be taught to your children, what was going to be acceptable. That this is what we're going to do. Now, in some states like California, Vermont, or New York State, or name your insert blue state here, they had this discussion 20 years ago. We're going to be more diverse. We're going to be more inclusive. We have our set of values. And everybody seemed to be like, well, that's crazy, but whatever. You do you, California. Here in Alabama, we never got to have that discussion. When we did have that discussion, it was soundly just batted down. It was rebuked. Like, no, we're not going to do that here. Well, the federal courts have come in and said, yes, you will. You will have gay marriage. Or, yes, you will. Okay, there's exceptions. But when it comes to this cultural stuff, when it comes to what is age appropriate, when it comes to sexual content, what is young adult, what is adult, what is children's, we just woke up one day and there it was. Did they ask you? Did they ask you if it was okay to have a drag queen read the children's storybooks in your library? Do we have this discussion at all? We never had it. We never got that opportunity. Instead, we had these elitist bureaucrats decide for us that we don't know what's good for us and just suck it up and take it. And this is true throughout government. These big hot button social topics that are in direct contradiction of scripture, people's religious beliefs. They go to church and your spiritual leader, your church pastor, whatever, preaches against this stuff. Well, here's the deal. We were told, sorry, that's the way things are now. You don't know what's good for you. This is the way of the world. Suck it up and take it. And that's where these populists, this is where these resentment, this is where a lot of this comes from, and this is the backlash. And these are just examples, but you could go all throughout government and find these examples where it's less about the consent of the governed. That instead it's caretaker. It's, Plato's Republic or something, where you have these philosopher kings telling you what's right and what's wrong, and you're not smart enough to know. You're in a lower class, so you just take it. You figure it out. Where did it go wrong here? So you see people just say, it's just pandering, and what Chris Elliott down in Baldwin County, Larry Stutz over in Colbert County, Ernie Arborough, these guys, Tommy Haynes when he was in the legislature from Jackson County, Richie Horton. What these guys stand for is just crazy town, and you need to just dismiss them, and but they're just pandering for votes. No, there's actually a reason for this reaction to what's going on in government. It's because, at times it feels like people aren't really paying attention into bureaucracy. They could care less. Anyway, let's throw it to break here, and I'll try to pick it up on the other side, keep some momentum going. But, Boomer, why don't you take us to break? This is Jeff Poore filling in for Phil Williams here on Right Side Radio. Welcome back to Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just the play. Right, Jeff Poore filling in for Phil Williams. I am a talk show host, website editor, 1819news.com, and you can also read me landyapmobile.com and on Breitbart. But good to be with you filling in for Phil. So I was starting the last segment, and we'll try to wrap this up here in this segment, but when did we ever get to have a discussion that we were going to have drag queen story hour in libraries? And that would be okay. Are any of these books that people object to? When did you and I decide this? Do y'all remember? Do you remember? Was it something at the legislature or maybe your county commission or your city council? Was there a public forum, a town hall or something where say, hey, you know, the world's changing and we need to be more inclusive, so we need to add this to our curriculum in our K-12 public schools. When do we as a community, as a society, as a state decide this? We didn't. We didn't decide any of this. It just sort of happened. We were told this is the way it was going to be. And there's a little frustration here. And I think you see it some of these events. You're really going to see it in the 2024 presidential election. But I think where it changes is 2026. And we're going to talk about this too. Like there's, I don't know how to describe where we're at right now in Alabama. There's low voter participation in Republican primaries. In a Republican primary, that's where everything is decided. It's not in the general election. There's very few swing places in Alabama right now. I mean, I guess Jefferson County to some degree, but it's definitely trending blue. But you look up and down this state, from Bridgeport to Grand Bay, from Dothan to Florence, and you wonder, like, do people realize that? Are they thinking about this? Are they this engaged? Probably not. I mean, he could tell you who the Attorney General of Alabama is. Of course, all of you could because you listen to the show and you're well-informed. But a lot of people, they just want to vote. I mean, it's not a Trump thing. They just want to vote Republican, conservative. That's the way they were raised. That's the culture. That's they go to church. And that's what they align with. But all of that's just a formality at this point. And what's happened is Deep Pockets really own the primary process. And I think Katie Britt's a fine senator. I had some questions, but she's turned out to be okay so far. But she was the establishment's pick. Was it Mo Brooks? It wasn't Mike Durant, who I'm not even sure why he was running, but it wasn't the flavor. How does that come to be, especially when you think of Alabama as this sort of grassrootsy conservative place? And it's because you have this low voter turnout or low participation in these primaries. And the people that are engaged, that do care enough to be engaged and involved, well, they're your business leaders, they're your bankers, your Rotary Club, your Chamber of Commerce, BCA, I mean, to some degree, the farmers, but people that are leaders in the community, and they're picking your candidates for you. And it's like just 23% or, anywhere between 16-23% turnout in primaries. So a very, very narrow slice is picking out kind of they are dictating the direction of the state. And I don't know how long this lasts, but you have this very business minded, which isn't conservative. I mean, there's some parallels there, but it's not absolute. A very business minded establishment at the top. That's who's calling the shots. With a lot of what's going on in the leadership,
that's what's calling the shots with what's going on in the governor's office a lot of times, even some of the bigger bureaucracies, public service commission, whatever, you name it. But then everything else is kind of left up to unelected bureaucrats. And we at times in Alabama historically have these populist uprisings. And as you like, you want to read about or go, there's a documentary about 75% of it is good. The other 25% is conspiratorial about Jim Folsom, big Jim Folsom, governor. And he was like one of these populist revolts in the state, a Democrat, obviously. But he pushed back, but he had his flaws and everything, but he was a response to the status quo. And I'm telling you guys, if you go watch this, you will think this guy is just like Donald Trump, in that he was the populist guy back when populism was sort of the politics du jour of the era, and pushing it back against what they call the big mules and the big mule planter coalition, the big plantations, the big ag and the Black Belt, and the industrialist of Birmingham, and some degree Mobile. And it just seemed like everything in the state was catered toward them. Well, we're getting close to that point right now. What happens? Does that, I think like history has a tendency to repeat itself. Does he really deal with the same DNA, maybe just different circumstances? And it's going to come. I don't know when, may not be in my lifetime. Could be in my lifetime, but I think there's clearly established a disconnect culturally and to maybe a lesser degree politically. And I think a lot of it we can attribute to just a sort of a lack of awareness at the state level. I spend a lot of time on state politics. That's my thing. If you want to talk about Trump, I suppose we could, and the indictments and subpoenas and whatever else. Or Hawaiian wildfires, global warming, if you believe that stuff. But kind of watching it, like building a big four-lane highway out in the Black Belt. Who's that for? You know, is it just KIV's legacy, or is Big Forestry saying, "Hey, we need to get our logging trucks to market our finished product from the sawmill to market"? I mean, there's all these questions about what's going on there. Why is it building I-65, making it six lanes from four to six lanes, a higher priority than that? Discussions, and you remember Trip Pittman, formerly of the Alabama Senate, with that, he's just like, well, you know what? To the victor goes the spoils. And that's what she wants to do. But we can get more into that. Whatever your thoughts may be, we'll make use of that. Anyway, I got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is Jeff Poore filling in for Phil Williams on Right Side Radio. Right Side Radio, solid conservative, it just played all right. Jeff Poore filling in here for Phil Williams, taking some well-deserved time off. Still to come on the program, about an hour from now, we'll hear from Alabama Republican Party Chairman John Wall. Been a busy day. I think there was the State Library Committee had a meeting, and he's on that board, but he's been busy. He had his own Republican meeting. Over the last weekend, Donald Trump in attendance. We spent a lot of time talking about that. And then also, he was up doing a fundraiser. I think I saw up at Guntersville up near Will Ainsworth territory. So that is, he's been a busy man. But we're going to talk to him about the library situation and some of the other things, what happened at the business meeting on Saturday, right before the rumble at the riverfront. But we'll get you clued in on the goings on there. But joining us now, we'll get you for a couple of segments here, I think. But a friend of mine, and I don't get him enough on my radio show, but I'm way down south, and I saw this as the perfect opportunity to bring on State Senator Garland Gudge or Coleman. Senator, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon, Jeff. Thanks for having me, brother. I'm doing well.
Hey, thank you for taking time. Well, we've had a little time since the special session. I guess we're right into we're headed toward a federal court date, but we'll see how that goes. But how you feeling? How we can talk more broadly the regular session. You and I got to catch up a little bit. You got some very important bills with patients' rights passed, but just in general, how are things going?
Yeah, it's going good. You know, personally, I'm doing well. My son just started school this week. My youngest son, back to Coleman High School. My oldest is waiting till next week and working with me this past summer and getting ready to go back to Samford University. So he'll be a sophomore there. And then Heather and I are just keeping our small business running and keeping it afloat. And, you know, you can't make your living out of the legislature. So we come home and work our rear ends off. And so that's what we're doing right now. And, it's just nice to have the family home for a little while.
Well, you get away from the rigmarole of politics back into the real world. I guess it kind of keeps you grounded, doesn't it?
It does. You know, and I think everybody needs that. You know, it's nice to kind of get your reset after you leave Montgomery and kind of get back home and get in the real world. And so it's nice to be back, and especially with your full family being here. So it's nice for us to be able to go out to eat, grill out a little bit, and just talk and laugh. And so get our heads back on straight. So it's nice anyway. And get ready for the next session, I guess.
Get ready for the next session, yeah, which is February. It can't believe it. Here we are sitting here, it's August, and February doesn't sound that far away. Hey,
no.
you were there Friday night. I saw you, the Trump event, and Donald Trump mentioned Interstate 65 and six lane again. And I'm pretty sure the lieutenant governor had a hand in that. But the reason I wanted to talk to you about it, back during the session, you were the chief architect of the resolution, saying, "Hey, Al Knight needs to start thinking about this, or we'd like you to start planning for this." So you've identified this as what ought to be, and we don't know that it is necessarily a priority for our state's transportation policy.
You know, you're exactly right. You have to start planning now. As my father always said, if you fail to plan, you're planning to fail. And so we have to look at where we're going to be in 10 years, where we're going to look in 15 years. And if you're anywhere on I-65 on the weekends, especially during peak season, which is during the summertime, you can't get to your destination without some type of bumper-to-bumper traffic, probably 50% of the time on the way down. And it's just not only annoying, but it's just wear and tear on your vehicles. You got to increase drive time. It's extra cost for travel, low productivity because you lose time. And it's just annoying. So I finally got to a point where talking with Lieutenant Ainsworth, saying, "Listen, we've got to do something here." He said, "Well, you need to pass a joint resolution to the House and to the Senate to talk to ALDOT to say, we need to start a study." And so we did that. We passed that so that they would have, to prioritize and kind of study what improvements are needed for additional capacity on I-65. And that was from the Tennessee state line, Alabama, Tennessee state line, all the way down to, the Gulf Coast beaches. And so the Port of Mobile. So the key for us is it's the whole state. Let's look at it at a 30,000 foot view. And then from that, is this a possibility? And then where are our number one priorities of where we need to expand immediately? But when you start coming into the larger metropolitan areas, a lot of times, obviously, they go to three lanes, sometimes even four, and sometimes they don't even have enough capacity. But in my small town of Coleman, Alabama, that's continuing to grow. It's two lanes is not enough already. And so as soon as you get on there, you're just trapped, your whole trip going up north 65 or south on 65. But yes, we did pass that resolution. I got their attention of ALDOT, which is what I wanted to do. Obviously, it's been a popular subject through this summertime, through the peak season of vacation, and Lieutenant Governor Ainsworth has pushed this a lot, and some of the other my colleagues in the Senate and in the House have pushed it. So I'm thankful that we just had the vision to go ahead and do this. And so when we start back session, they are supposed to have a report ready for us. And what my goal is to see where we are, see how they're coming along with that report so that we can actually start maybe appropriating money that we needed to through the state and through the feds to start making some change.
Well, and here's what a little troubling. I don't I'm not up on what the Alabama Department of Transportation, how it comes to its decisions and what it deems to be priorities, but and you know, a lot of the discussion, Senator, has been, you know, West Alabama Corridor I-65, and that's fine. We could get into that if you like, but I think what's a little more troubling is it just doesn't seem to be a priority of the Alabama Department of Transportation. Our governor, it's just saying, well, yeah, sure, we'd like to do that, but we're busy, or you know, there just doesn't seem to be enough movement. I guess south of Birmingham, you get Alabaster, it goes to four lanes, and they're going to try to get it done all the way to Calera, but beyond that, I don't know where they're doing more work to improve that situation.
Yeah, and I'm not either. And that's one of the frustrating things, especially in North Alabama. You get to the county line at Mulberry River coming up 65 north to Coleman County, and it goes from three lane to two lane. And it absolutely drives me crazy. We're the fourth largest growing county in the state from the census, and we're still at a two lane out on 65. We have six exits for our county, six. And from that, we're blessed to have those exits. But at the same point, everything is running through from the state highways to Highway 31, 157, 69, to the interstate, obviously. And all of 278, all of those interstates and highways are running straight into the feed of I-65. And it's so annoying to me that if we would have been planning 10 years ago, we would have started having this covered in the busiest parts of the state. We're not doing that. I don't think the leadership has their eyes on it. I'm worried about ALDOT having their eyes on it. I don't believe they do right now. And so that's why we wanted to pass that resolution. It's just to get their attention. And if we're able to get their attention, which I believe all of us have done, especially after President Trump said what he did in his speech last Friday night, I think everybody's starting to focus on it and realizing this is a problem. And if there's a problem right in front of your face, there's no sense in not fixing that problem before we go put a lot of money to another issue that somebody wants as a priority. There's no sense in going that direction when we could be taking care of what we need to that we've already started right in front of our face. And so I think that the congestion on I-65 is a priority that we have to address.
Well, and right there, the Mulberry Fork Bridge, I mean, it's already like there, six lane. I mean, like, that's the hard part right there. And then getting it done, I mean, I have no idea what this would cost to get, let's say, that six lanes done from Coleman, from one end of Coleman County to the other end to Morgan County. I don't know, but I guess around the mountains it'd be heading into Morgan County would be pretty difficult. But in the meantime, like, this doesn't seem like it's not like you're reinventing the wheel here. I mean, it's just building that lane and maybe fixing some of the overpasses. Or underpasses, I should say, in a way that could align this. These things seem like they would be relatively easy to kind of figure out.
It should be easy. And I think the words that you just said, Jeff, is that we don't know the cost of that. Exactly. We don't know the cost. We don't have a plan for how much that is going to cost if we wanted to expand. And so our goal is to start looking at it. How much does it cost? How much capacity do we need to run through not just Coleman County, but through the whole state, obviously? And how much per county is that going to take from the taxpayers' dollars and from the feds to be able for us to do that? Obviously, it's a priority for President Trump. It's a priority for the lieutenant governor. It's a priority for the legislature, especially the Senate. And from that, we want to know those numbers so that we can address them. But we cannot make educated decisions about where the fiscal responsibility that we have on our shoulders from being an elected official, we cannot make educated decisions without knowing those costs. And so we don't know those costs. The key is let's find out what those costs are so that we can place our money to fix the problems that are in front of us. And so that was really what this resolution did. But it's past time that we're looking at how to fix this issue. And again, if you're on I-65 traveling north or south, you know, everybody started taking pictures and started sending them to me, started sending them to you, I assume, and everyone. And it's amazing how many pictures are starting to go viral of them just sitting in traffic on I-65.
Senator,
pressure.
Well, sorry to interrupt you there. We're gonna jump in and get a break. Hold that thought, and we'll pick it up on the other side. This is Right Side Radio. Jeff Poore filled in for Phil Williams. We'll be right back.
for pretty much the last few months of their life because healthcare facilities would not let them in during the COVID outbreak. And I had multiple, probably just like you, friends, family, relatives that called and said, listen, we can't get into the hospital to see our loved ones. They're by themselves or calling us and please, you know, come see me. And the healthcare facilities weren't able to or would not let them in. And having said that, I passed a bill, sponsored a bill, and really worked on it for about 2 years. And this past session, I finally made sure it was done correctly. And it's called the visitation bills, where you have an essential caregiver. And the difference is my first bill that I passed 2 years ago was a visitation rights bill, but it didn't go far enough. This past session was essential health care giver. And what the difference is that you can have visitors come to your room during a pandemic like COVID or anything else. But that would be people similar to like church groups or just your friends that coming. The hospitals are still in control of that, where they can say, listen, this particular patient is too sick. We're worried about little Johnny coming in with the flu and giving it to this particular patient. We can't have them in. And they can cut off the visitation rights for friends and even family. But the difference in the bill that I just passed is you as a patient get to name an essential health care giver. And for that, you get minimum 2 hours a day and plus your visitation rights, if there are visitation rights still allowed, to you as a patient. And you can name anybody you want to come in and help you, just walk around the room, feed you ice cubes if you're dehydrated, use the restroom, feed you, take care of you, just get a blanket if you get cold. Having a father that was in the hospital the last few couple months of his life back and forth, I cannot imagine what he would have been like if he would have been without his family and without me being able to be there with my sisters and my mom taking turns. The great thing about this bill is that it guarantees the rights to the Alabamians that if a pandemic breaks out, they have somebody in the room with them so that they can be taken care of at least a couple hours a day. And if the visitation rights are still involved, they have that plus the visitation rights hours. And so I think it was a big win. The person that we first originally named this bill after was Harold Sachs, which was part strong part of the GOP party and was chief of staff for years and years. And then during the pandemic, one of our own senators, Dan Roberts, his wife passed away where he wasn't able to be in the room with her. And so we made sure that we added her name to that bill. And then Debbie Wood helped us in the House sponsor that. And she had her mother with the same aspect. And again, nothing against the healthcare facilities, the nurses, the doctors, they did everything I think they possibly could do. They were heroes in this whole deal. But we want to make sure as Alabamians that we have our patient rights, that we have people in our room that we know are our loved ones that are taking care of us because the nurses were just overwhelmed. But I was proud of that bill, and I appreciate you bringing that up. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of hard lessons learned through the COVID experience, but just maybe it was a lack of preparedness. Who knows? I mean, you know, right around the corner, there could be another. We could be facing another pandemic, but you know, at least it's just not a, you know, we flee to the safety of the government, and they're going to exert their benevolence on us and tell us how things are going to be. There are some things that just seem like right and wrong, even if it is questionably safe or unsafe or whatever.
When you have somebody that's been married 52 years and they can't see their spouse for 3 months, and then that spouse dies in the hospital without loved ones around them, without their daughters, without their sons, without their cousins and uncles and aunts and everybody being there, that's just not the right thing. And what you just said, right and wrong, is really what this whole bill was about, is making sure that we are on the right side of this. And morally, I think it's the right thing to do. And, you know, there's studies, if you really want to get into the science and what the medical aspects of this are, people get better when they know that there's a loved one next to them, holding their hand, taking care of them, and that they feel more secure. And so they're more relaxed. And so their body heals faster. And so we could get into the medical aspect of it, the science aspect of it, or just the right or wrong aspect. But this bill is right in all of those. And so, you know, I'm really proud of this whole bill.
And the implementation, I mean, it's enacted now. We know that that's on the books, that if something happens tomorrow, this is in place.
You're exactly right. So I'm thankful for that. It took us 2 years to realize there's the difference, and we kept focusing on the term visitors' rights and visitors' patients and patients' rights in the first bill 2 years ago. And even after it passed, there were healthcare facilities that weren't able to allow people in because they thought they might lose their funding from the feds. And that wasn't really the case, but we had to make sure that we went one step further this past session and then separate visitors' rights versus essential health caregivers, which is, you know, decided on by the patient. And by doing that, it really made everybody kind of open their eyes in the healthcare facility world. They were on board with us at the end, whether it was the nursing homes or the hospital association, they were in the end were with us, and it really turned out the way it's supposed to. You know, you go through a process that you hear at the state house, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. This is the right way that it worked, and we all came together for the best bill possible. So, again, I'm proud of it. I'm thankful. You know, there's one other part of that bill, not really that, but a parallel bill that I passed 2 years ago, and we're talking that you and I were talking offline about small business that that not only I own, but, you know, obviously 90% of the new jobs created in Alabama are small business jobs. And from that, if there is another pandemic and the government tries to shut down all except for large box stores again, like they did this time, and churches. If you as a small business sell that product at the big box stores that remain open, then you can remain open. And if any store, big box store or small business, stays open, then the churches get to stay open too. They can't shut the churches down. So I thought that was a big deal just for everybody's rights to worship.
Yeah, the churches is a peculiar thing to shut down, and you know, it's like you said, the power of prayer and whatever you think of that, it doesn't matter. I mean, a lot of people believe in that, and they were denied that opportunity to worship in a group setting because we had to be better safe than sorry.
Exactly. You know, and obviously you just go to the Constitution. It says we're able to have freedom of religion, and we really weren't during that pandemic. They were shutting down churches. People couldn't go to any type of settings where there was worship there or prayer gatherings. And so you can't do that again in Alabama. So I'm proud to be able to be a sponsor for that with Jamie Keel in the house up in Franklin County.
Senator, we got to leave it there. We're out of time. But thank you so much for making time for us this afternoon, and hopefully we can talk again soon.
I do. I always appreciate being on your show, and thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. That's State Senator Garland Gudger there. We got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is Jeff Poore filling in for Phil Williams on Right Side Radio.